Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hi, folks, and welcome to Slam Fire Radio, the 22 edition. I'm Owen Swelling.
I'm Matthew McClatchy.
This is going to be the worst episode ever, pretty much.
And he's Trevor Furlock. And joining us tonight, we have Ken Kowalski.
Welcome, hey, Ken. How you doing?
Of the Good. Rimfire podcast.
And the American Rifleman podcast, I believe. Is that not correct?
Modern Rifleman Radio.
Yeah, same thing. Close enough.
Ken, he can't even get the shows on our network right, so please don't be offended by that.
I still don't know all the shows on our network.
Oh, no,
I'd never heard of before.
I'm talking about the Canadian one. He can't get those ones right.
Uh-oh.
I hardly get this one right.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so welcome, Ken.
Thanks.
Good to have you here.
It is. Now, normally what we do is we start off the show with what we've done with guns. So, Ken, as our esteemed expert and co-host and guest and, I don't know, whatever the heck else you are, why don't you let us know what you did with guns this week?
This week?
Well, you know, in general.
Just plans, actually. I made plans for this weekend. I'm going to take a friend of mine who hasn't been shooting in a really long time. I'm going to take him shooting.
So you made plans to go shooting then is what you've done so far this week.
Yeah, really, that's all I've done, really.
Well, hey, that's better than some of us.
Other than going in, you know, and fondling some of my rifles earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Ken, let's get caught up a little bit. Where are you now? Okay, and actually, for the listeners, Ken is an active serviceman with the United States Army, correct?
Correct.
And you are a medic?
Roger, yeah, I'm a combat medic, and I recently just moved back to my home state of Colorado.
Right, okay, because last year you were overseas where?
I was in Afghanistan from fall of 2011 to kind of like basically the end of summer of 2012.
Podcasting from a foxhole about 22s.
Yeah.
Well, why not, really? 22s are awesome.
So you're back home? You're back home now for how long?
It looks honestly like it's going to be permanent.
Oh, that's cool. You must be happy about that. Or are
mixed
you?
Mixed feelings.
Did you lose a leg or something?
No, but I probably will be leaving the military.
Okay.
Within the next year. So that's both good and bad.
What do you got lined up?
School.
Ooh. Oh, excellent.
Go back to school.
You're going to stay in the medical profession?
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. I was medical before I went into the Army and, you know, with the plan of doing it once I got out too. I never really planned on being a lifer.
Right.
Yep. Just because I joined at, you know, such a kind of an older age, you know, for going to the military. I never really planned on being able to retire.
Well, hold on. You don't sound that old. You're not older than Trevor, are you?
He's not like Stan old.
Well, when he joined the Army at 38 and he turned 39 in basic, you are the old man.
Yeah.
You're the old man of almost every unit you join.
So you got through basic turning 39 years old.
Yeah, in basic.
Wow.
And then
you're tough. Jeez.
I turned 40 2 days before I deployed.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was just going to say, Matthew and Owen, you two guys could do that. I would die. I break a sweat getting dressed in the morning, but you two could pull it off, I'm sure. Owen, yeah. Anyway, Matthew.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold much for me getting through basic training.
You're not carrying in a whole bunch of extra weight. It'd be no trouble to get your stamina and endurance back.
No, I just wouldn't be able to do anything afterwards.
By the time he had his 90-pound pack on, he'd weigh as much as you, Trevor.
both funny and insulting. So I'll let it pass. Yeah. Cool. So that's it, Ken. You didn't fire around at all this week? Not even in anger?
Not even in anger.
I'll be honest, this is really embarrassing to admit, but I haven't been to the range or anything since I've been back to Colorado.
All right. Whose idea was it to get this guy on
our
show?
Oh, my goodness.
And he lives in Colorado.
Congratulations, though, Ken, on recalling to
that
state
is
representatives.
Yeah, that is really
news
cool.
I've had almost all year.
All right. Bring
that's a game changer.
Yeah,
bring
tell
the listeners up to speed on what all this means.
So basically, earlier this year, the Senate of Colorado decided they were going to push through several laws, and three ended up getting through and signed into law, restricting gun owners in several different ways. One was the universal background checks. Two was 15-round mag limit. Old magazines were going to be grandfathered in, but it's like one of those typical things. The laws are written real poorly, so there's no differentiation between grandfathered magazines and new ones. You know, technically you could be arrested at any point if you had a magazine over 15 rounds.
Right, because there was no way to tell if it was grandfathered or not.
Yeah, it would be on you to, you know, prove that you had it before.
I hate those laws. Reverse onus.
And then, what was the third one? Why am I spacing that one? The magazine limit thing also affected shotguns. And it kind of depended on how, you know, if it was a fixed tube or a magazine-fed shotgun. Kind of depended, but I think it limited it to, you know, most of like your pump shotguns and things like that to like 8 rounds. There was that, the universal background check. And the universal background check one was another really poorly written law. You know, as these things tend to be when they push them through so fast that nobody really reads them.
Mm-hmm.
In that, if I were not home and my wife were to use, I don't even understand how they would prove this because there's no, there's no registry right now. And some of these weapons, you know, we didn't purchase in this state. But technically if my wife were to use one of my firearms while I wasn't home, that would be an illegal transfer.
That's just
dumb. I would have illegally transferred that firearm to her. So you can't loan a gun to anyone. Things like that. The big part of this is that the people of Colorado fought against these laws. There were hearings held where there was testimony given by, I think it was like 50 of the 55. Wait a minute. I'm goofing the numbers a little bit. But
that's all right. Just make them up as you go along. That's what we do.
All but six of the sheriffs in the state fought against these laws and went up to our state senate and said, hey, this is stupid. Don't do this. This isn't going to protect anybody. You're just going to drive away business. Magpul ended up moving out of Colorado.
Yeah, I remember that whole thing. That's crazy.
Yeah,
and good on them for doing it.
Yeah. That's taken millions out of the state. Not only jobs, but, you know,
well, tax revenue.
The tax revenue that the state was making. So they're really just shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, good one.
No pun intended.
But only with a 15-round mag.
That's right.
And
so bring us up then, Ken, to how this affected a couple of politicians.
Yeah, so the state's Senate leader was a guy from a district I used to live in, and he was one of the big people to push this through. He and a woman who represents a district down in Pueblo, Colorado, we managed to successfully get them onto recall ballots.
That's awesome. And what does that mean for people who don't know?
Basically means we're going to fire them.
Right. So you're going to vote somebody else in.
Out of office and somebody else put in.
Yeah.
That's awesome that you can get that done.
It became a huge fight where hundreds of thousands of dollars were pouring in from out of state on a couple different sides. People are familiar with Mayor Bloomberg of New York.
Yep.
He poured several hundred thousand dollars into a campaign of trying to protect these particular Democrats. And the NRA stepped up and put
Did
money
the same,
into
basically.
The pro-gun side. Yeah. And but you know, a lot of this, even though a lot of people out of state want to focus on how much money was spent, like by different sides, a lot of this was really grassroots effort as far as the ballots.
That's what really counts too, because if there's no grassroots movement, then really the people don't care. And this, you know, the country should be run by the people. So if the people are doing the voting and it's a grassroots movement, that means the people actually care. So, I mean, that's, you know, all political movements should really be grassroots.
And that was, like, the political party of the two people that got recalled actually came out and voted against their own candidate.
Ooh.
In large numbers.
Wow.
And so this, I hope, is really sending a message across the U.S.
Don't mess with our guns.
Yeah, don't screw with things that we're guaranteed.
That's right.
Our rights. And that when the people call them, email them, send letters in, or, you know, the sheriff testifies, they need to listen.
Yep.
And out-of-state money isn't going to save their butts.
Cool.
So a huge victory for gun owners in Colorado.
Awesome.
The next part will be trying to get these laws repealed.
Right, because technically they're on the books still, so you need to get rid of them
books.
Now. Yeah.
There's a lawsuit that's been filed. How do you say that? I'm not really legally inclined, but basically, there's a couple of both the NRA and the Colorado State Sheriff's Association has sued the state itself over the wording of most of these things because they're either unenforceable laws or they're arresting people who are actually within the law.
Right.
You know, there's no way to really play this correctly with the way that these laws are written. So the wording's got to get changed or there's just got to be tossed out.
Well, it's a good example of antis writing gun laws. The anti-gun people don't really understand guns for the most part. And so they come up with these laws based on what they see in Hollywood movies, thinking that, you know, if we ban all high-capacity clips, you know, you can't reload a clip, so the assault capacity clips can be, you know, we can get rid of them. It's like, you're dumb.
That was actually a quote from one of the Colorado Democrats.
Yep, that's right.
He had no idea that you could put bullets back into a magazine.
We also need to ban the shoulder thing that goes up.
Right.
The shoulder thing that goes up.
Before this turns into an episode of Politics and Guns, let's talk about guns.
Oh, that's always fun. We should do that.
That's enough politics, gentlemen. Holy.
Poor Trevor.
Like I said, I'm sure Toby and Paul are really enjoying it, but cool. Well, that's good, though, Ken, that you're seeing some pushback and getting results.
Definitely.
Usually it only goes one way, but when you're messing with a citizen's actual constitutional rights, it still blows my mind that they get away with as much as they do.
The stuff that is going on these days really does blow my mind. I don't get it. How, you know, scandal after scandal is just kind of
apathy.
Oh well,
apathy.
When's the next iPad come out?
Exactly.
All right, Matt. Yeah. Well, let's. Why don't you tell us what you did this week?
All right. Well, I got out to the range with Andre on Saturday. So thank you, Andre, for calling me at 8:30 in the morning and waking me up. That was cool of you.
He is my new hero.
So Andre's a guy, I talked about him last week on the show. He had a dueling tree at the range 2 weekends ago, and I told him if he ever went back to the range with it, and I'd love to bring out a bunch more guns and shoot it with him. And so he called me up on Saturday and said he was out, so I packed up a pretty good sized arsenal from the McClatchy collection and headed out to the range, and we shot for about 4 hours, and we did pretty much nothing but dueling tree the entire time, back and forth. Cool. We did it with rimfire rifles. We did it with handguns, rimfire handguns, centerfire handguns, and then just we started mixing and matching, and we had a great time. We had a lot of fun. We had some talking in there, too. We got, you know, got some political chatter done and stuff, and it was just a really good range day. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I did. I'm back to work now, so I haven't done a whole lot of other stuff, so... with guns. But anyway, that was pretty much it. So, Owen, how about you?
Well, I didn't do much at all this week. I did take my KSG for a walk.
They do need to be walked on a regular basis.
It needed some exercise, so I took it for 3 or 4 miles probably.
It's a good walk.
A good run. Yeah.
Still for sale?
I don't know.
I just have one request. Before you sell it, I want to see a goose taken out of the air with that thing.
It would have to be a pretty close goose.
Oh, yeah,
you'd have to be some fancy plugging going on to be able to goose hunt with it.
Oh, that's true too. You can't do three. You'd have to put like a 13-round plug in each side.
Yeah.
Oh, but how epic would that be to get some YouTube video footage of you taking geese out of the air with a KSG?
That would be interesting.
Would be cool.
Yeah. Wow.
Maybe so I could do it
version?
If I had the choke adapter for the front, which I considered getting, right?
Yeah, you'd have a better chance then anyway.
At least I could put a modified in it. Goodness.
Yeah.
Cool. Cam, what were you going to say?
He wasn't going to say anything.
Nothing. No, heard the KSG part, and I was like, oh, I don't actually know anybody in here that has one. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we got,
We've got one communal one is what it is. Trevor had it for a while. Now Owen has it. Then Owen's going to sell it and somebody else will have it. We just have the one in Canada, basically.
Yeah. there's 50.
I think it's that way with a lot of Kel-Tec products. They're just kind of vaporware, you know, like.
Cool.
They're in stock in a few places. That's why I'm thinking about not selling it now.
Oh.
You don't have the monopoly on the good price anymore.
Yeah, because I'm not going to be able to come ahead on it.
You'll get your money back because they went up in price.
Oh yeah. Well, so I'll get my I'll get my money back, but
yeah, but he could have gotten twice his money back if they hadn't come in.
Yeah.
Because they were in really high demand. So just wait till they all sell out again, Owen.
I guess so.
Wait for another buyer's market.
Cool.
That's what capitalism is all about, baby.
Now you guys tell me, because see, I didn't make a penny on it when I sold it to Owen.
You're a nice guy. That's the difference.
Don't tell anyone that. That's not the rumor. What else did you do?
Oh, sorry. I was actually going to ask, Owen, did you get any more goose hunting in?
I did not.
No? Okay.
I have been so busy. Work has just been right straight out. So that pretty much keeps me away from getting much hunting done when I have no time.
That'll do it. Cool. All right. Well, I guess that brings us to Trevor.
Good. Okay. See you in a bit.
All right. Well, I actually did get some rimfire done.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's North American Arms 22.
Those are those little tiny pistols, yeah?
Tiny little pistols that the gun dudes are talking about all the time. So Pierre-Luc at our club, he bought one with... I think it either takes both long rifle and magnum, or he has two separate cylinders. But I know that I fired both out of it, magnum and long rifle, whether he changed cylinders or not, I don't know. But it's a horrible looking little thing. It's a horrible looking. The barrel is kind of square and boxy, and of course long, right? It's a non-restricted, or it's restricted, so it's at least 4.2 inches. And on that small framed gun, it looks a little odd, but kind of cool. Almost like an 8-inch barrel on a regular 357 kind of look. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it kind of looks like an old like cowboy and western kind of revolver, doesn't it?
Somebody said it looks like a clown gun. I'm like, what are you talking about, clown gun? Clowns don't carry guns. He's like, the Joker used to carry a gun. I'm like, But you expect a flag to come out, unroll, and say bang on the end, kind of.
Right.
Now, aesthetics aside, great little gun. And nicely put together. I'd say it's a really good quality piece of work, especially for the money. And it's just fun to shoot. So thanks to Pierre Luc for letting me put some rounds down range with that. Other than that, a crazy busy week as far as guns go. Since Sunday, I've loaded anyway, 2,000 rounds of 9mm. We did that in one sitting, and 2,000 rounds of we did that on Saturday. Yeah, 2,000 rounds of 40, and then a couple of days later, 2,000 rounds of 9. And I learned that if you mistakenly put CCI small rifle primers in your 40 caliber handgun loads, you'll get a power factor of 184.
As opposed to
170.
So you boost the power factor by almost 15 points.
Yeah.
By changing the primer. That's interesting. Didn't realize there'd be that much of a difference with just changing the primer out.
My first test loads were CCI pistol primers with 4.8 grains of tight group. Uh-huh. And then I, like I said, mistakenly made the next 600 rounds with rifle primers. I got out and I tested those and got a power factor of 184. So I thought, well, I can't use these in competition because it's just going to be extra recoil and silliness for nothing, but I'll practice with them. So I started on Sunday, and up until yesterday, I had 1,000 rounds through the gun. Monday. No, wait, no. I shot Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I took Wednesday off, and I went back tonight, and tonight I shot almost 400 rounds.
See, so, now aren't you glad you learned the days of the weeks with me last year?
Thanks for that, by the way.
They really came in handy, didn't they?
In two languages. So, yeah, I the provincials are this weekend, and I'm getting used to the new STI, so I had to get as much trigger time as possible, but I didn't just shoot for the sake of shooting. I went to benstoger.com, and there's a bunch of cool drills on there. So I was shooting drills. I was always doing something productive. I would go to the range with a practice plan and say, okay, I'm going to dedicate this many rounds to this drill, and then I'm going to do so many rounds on this drill. And I'd practice a draw and mag change and transition and build drills and stuff like that. So in the first 1,000 rounds, I had not a single malfunction on my STI. So as I said on Facebook, proof positive that it's not a 1911. And the name, you know, if it was a 1911, it'd be called a 1911. It's called a 2011. So how could
Okay. Come on now.
Anyway, I put about another 400 through the gun today, and it's filthy. And I know that it's filthy because it failed to lock open once on one mag. And last time it did that, the gun needed to be cleaned, and it didn't do it again until 1,400 rounds later. So it's not a Glock. It doesn't have nooks and crannies for the dirt to build up in. When it's dirty, it feels dirty. You put a mag in, you release the slide to close the chamber, and sometimes you need to give it a little bump to help the round go up there because the feed ramp is just caked with soot. But I'm liking it. I got a grip in. I'm not sure if I talked about that last week or not. I got a grip in, a smaller size aluminum grip. I tried it. Didn't work.
You talked about that.
Yeah. So, also on Sunday, we also ran some ARs and some shotguns. I ran the house with my 590 and ran the – I sighted and shot some more with the STI AR in preparation for the three-gun match.
So, there's a three-gun match?
Yeah.
When's that? Can I go?
No, no, everyone else can. It's on October 19th. There's going to be 8 stages, about 150 rounds,
149, I think, actually.
Yeah,
it was 147.
get picky, 147. Get picky, yeah. We'll call it 150 just for simplicity's sake, right?
Sounds
anyway,
right.
Yeah, so that's October 19th. It's going to be fun. The pilgrimage from Ontario is going to come, except for Pat. He's wussing out on us because he's a big wuss. Yeah. We'll have random guy Dave from Ontario, Foley, and Bolivar.
Now, did you remember to book in random guy Dave from New Brunswick?
Well, apparently he's not coming, but no,
what?
I had forgot. But now Owen tells me a New Brunswick random guy can't make it.
No, that's unacceptable.
That's what I said. Those very words, unacceptable.
What's going on?
Don't know yet.
Gosh, anyway. I'll set it straight. Don't worry.
Yeah, straighten that guy out. Eh?
Yeah, I'll do that.
So and that's it. Just lots and lots of time on the STI, and then I'll leave tomorrow afternoon to go to the provincials in Hampton. This should be fun. 16 stages, 2 long days. We're probably going to get some rain, unfortunately. And my goal is just to shoot smooth. And if I shoot smooth, I'll shoot clean. And if I shoot clean, I'll score well. So I just want to be smooth. Get up there and don't overtry. Just tell myself to relax and be smooth. And, you know, when you try too hard, that's when you get the bobbles and stuff like that. So I'm just going to go in with a different mindset than I did with the Nationals. And, of course, the Nationals, I had enough talent in all my system to kill a plow horse, but...
What you're saying is you're bigger than a plow horse, is what you're saying. You said it yourself. I'm just saying.
Because I didn't die, that's right.
Or you just have a better liver.
There you go. Oh, there's not much left to the liver, actually. All right, gentlemen. Let's move on, Owen. What are we doing now?
Huh? What? Hello?
He did. Yeah, see, he does that, right? That was a test. Proof positive that he
I think we may have just lost him. He actually just dropped from the call. He was experiencing a pretty severe thunderstorm in his area, so he just lost power.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Click your heels together 3 times, Owen.
Come on back to us.
They had one tornado like yesterday or the day before, and yeah, he told us before we started, if I
disappear,
call. Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess, Trevor, why don't you kick us off to what we're going to talk about this week?
Oh, no. I think it's much more appropriate if you do.
It is. So we're going to talk Rimfire with Ken. And, Ken, you were obviously the correct guy for this guest spot.
I don't know. No offense, Ken. I don't think we should have got 22 Plinkster. At least he shoots once in a while.
That's true. 22 Plinkster would have been a good guy. But, Ken, tell us a little bit about your Rimfire podcast, first of all, and then maybe just kind of a brief background as to why you did the Rimfire podcast, and then maybe a little bit about what you have for Rimfire guns and what you find so fascinating about Rimfire.
Okay.
This is going to be good.
This might be boring. I don't know.
No, it's not. Not to me. Look, I am the Rimfire king. I love Rimfire. I've been waiting for this show ever since one, basically, so...
So basically, I got into firearms probably somewhere around 10 years ago. And for a lot of that time, I was just like one of those guys who, you know, I bought up a bunch of different guns and, you know, I went to the range and I shot with them, but I didn't really know what the hell I was doing. I could...
Kind of like Matthew now.
I could hit the target, you know, like most of the time, but... I didn't really have good skills, and mostly what I had was a head full of...
What about bow hunting skills? Do you have bow hunting skills?
Nunchuck skills? Do you have nunchuck skills? How about computer hacking skills?
Yeah,
I wish I did have computer hacking skills. But...
Sorry, carry
on. So anyway, and then I started listening to podcasts probably, I don't know, like maybe 5 years ago. Something like that. You know, and at the time, there weren't really a whole lot of things out there for firearms podcasts. But there was a couple of different ones. One that I listened to was Michael Bain's Downrange Radio. And he was really hot that particular year. I think pretty much all the time. But he was talking a lot about training with Rimfire stuff to... actually get your skill set down. And so, and then I kind of heard of this marksmanship program that had been started down here in the U.S. Called the Appleseed Project.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about that. I've heard of it too. I don't know exactly what it is, but
yeah, so it's actually super cool. And so I ended up picking up. Actually, I don't think I had my 1022 at that time, but I had an M forgery in the AR 15, like a 16-inch M4 styled rifle.
Right.
And I ended up picking up a conversion bolt for it so that I could shoot 22. And that was, at the time, was made by Spikes Tactical. And the only problem I found once I went to the program was that I just went down there with iron sights and learned how short of a sight radius the M4 really has.
That's a good point.
It was kind of difficult to do that, the kind of shooting that they were trying to teach me at the time. I don't think it is now, but I think as sort of a noob to rule, like, more precision shooting, it was hard for me to get down to the size groups that, you know, they were trying to get you down to. And basically, it's not like super hard, or it doesn't sound like it's super hard, because their standard for a rifleman is 4 MOA or better.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not too bad.
It's all from practical firing positions. You know, there's no bench stuff, no supported shooting, nothing like that. It's all from standing, unsupported, kneeling or sitting, and then unsupported prone shooting. And they do these little timed kind of strings of fire as you go through the qualifications. It's basically like a shortened Army qualification test, but you only do it at 25 meters on these reduced targets. And you do it in four stages. You'd end up shooting a total of 40 rounds in four stages with some magazine changes and stuff like that. And then you tally up your score, and they have kind of a breakdown of what's a rifleman, a sharpshooter, that kind of thing. And I was sort of knocking at the door, but I really wasn't getting up into that rifleman category. But that was all I had. And I had a few reliability issues with the conversion at that point. It was basically brand new. And I hadn't
hadn't broken in yet at all or anything?
Well, it hadn't broken in. And also, like, I learned a few things along the way of how to tune it. And, like, I changed out a couple parts. But the people in this program are so cool that, like, the instructors just loaned me a rifle.
Oh, that's cool.
And, so I shot at that, like, I think the whole second day, you know, it was one of the instructors' rifles.
Nice.
And, from then I was basically hooked. You know, I was definitely on the rimfire bandwagon, because I went down for this weekend shoot, you know, that's like 2 days of instruction, and probably shot over 1,000 rounds, and I didn't pay squat to do it.
I know. Isn't that what's
ammunition costs?
I love that about rimfire. You can just shoot and shoot and shoot.
So I ended up doing another shoot with those guys, but it was a week-long camp kind of thing, and I basically trained you up to be one of their instructors.
That's cool.
An instructor in training. So that was kind of a goal of mine, and this was right before I went into the Army too. So I was kind of really wanting to develop my shooting skills even more, knowing that I was going to end up heading overseas. And I ended up at that point, I listened to a couple of podcasts by a guy named Tony Brown. He runs Firearms Cafe and Armed Ape podcast. I don't know if you guys have caught those.
First one.
The Firearms Cafe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Armed Ape is real interesting, too. It's kind of more, has a little more variety to it. And I I called in sort of a three-part review to his show of my experience with the Appleseed, and then also like what I used, you know, what rifles I took down there and how that all went. So that was over like three episodes of his show. I thought, you know what? I could do this. After a while, I had already joined the Army and I'd gone through basic and the,
yeah, once you get through basic, geez, podcasting is nothing.
Well, yeah, basically. I was living in El Paso, Texas at that point, and the first show I started actually was more of like a zoology related show that's now dead in the water, but it's another story. But I decided, like just a few months before I deployed, to start this show, the Rimfire Podcast, because nobody at that point, and I don't think still, was specifically covering Rimfire stuff show after show. So I just kind of like saw it as a whole, you know, a niche that could be filled, and decided to go for it.
Cool. Well, it seemed to work out pretty good for you. You had quite the following, and you know, it was an interesting show. I caught quite a few of the episodes anyway, and I have to say I enjoyed it. So,
cool. Appreciate that. The sad thing is I ended up getting out more regular episodes while I was deployed.
Yeah, I noticed that. Out.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Just because. Especially since I moved up to my new unit here in Colorado, I just have a lot less free time.
Yeah. Well, that's understandable, I guess. So talk a little bit about some of your favorite rimfire firearms, and maybe both rifle and pistol.
Okay. Definitely my 10/22 is my favorite rimfire rifle. I have my eye on some other ones that I want to try, definitely. But out of ones that I've owned, this 10/22 has been my favorite. I ended up putting the tech sights on it.
Yes, yes, I've heard good things about those.
And they basically, for anybody who hasn't seen these, they basically reproduce the sight picture of a like an M1 Garand or an AR-15.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
that I don't know.
Peep sight kind of thing.
Yeah, peep sight picture. You know, basic like North American rifle kind of sight picture, battle rifle.
And not only that, it really lengthens the sight radius too, which makes it even that much more accurate.
Yeah, and then, so going from the little open buckhorn sight to the tech sights, yeah, it's like night and day.
Mm-hmm.
And so threw those on there, and I've taken that to a couple shooting events.
Now, have you done any other modifications to it besides that? Like, have you changed out the trigger or anything?
No, I haven't touched the trigger package yet, although I keep threatening to. I have an extended mag release.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first it was kind of, I almost had to pry all the mags out.
Right.
I don't have any of the new 25 rounders. All I have are the flush 10 round magazines. Cause that's just what I like shooting that rifle with.
Yep.
I got sick of like trying to, you know, pick the magazines out with the regular, mag release in there. So I put in that.
Sorry to interrupt, Ken.
Oh, yeah, but by the way, Owen's back.
I'm back. Yeah.
All right.
And I got a 10. I have a 10/22 as well, and I find mine all drop right out. You just slide your finger forward, hit that lever, and boom, they just fall right out.
Straight from stock.
Mine did too.
Yeah.
Well, Matthew was mine stock.
Yeah, yours was stock. Yours fell right out as well because Trevor owned mine for a while.
That actually makes me think of something. To be fair to the rifle, I had changed the stock.
Oh, that that'll do it sometimes.
Have an effect on it. I changed from it when I bought it. It came with the plain wood stock,
mm-hmm.
and I changed that out to a Hogue overmold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that could make a difference.
I liked the kind of the tacky feel to it.
Yes, it really helps you grip it. You're right.
Well, it's hard. You know, that recoil, you got to really make sure you get a good grip.
You really do. I mean, rim, they really kick.
It'll get away from you.
Cool. All right. Well, what about favorite pistol then? What do you have for a favorite rimfire pistol?
Right now, the only thing I have for rimfire pistols is a conversion slide for a compact Glock.
Oh, that's it'll interesting.
It'll fit a Glock 19 or 23 or 32. Doesn't matter which model you have. But any of the like the mid-size Glock models. And I love the hell out of the thing. It's made by Advantage Arms. And I haven't had... as long as I feed it the ammo that it likes, I haven't had any issues.
And what does it like?
It liked, or definitely likes, CCI mini mags.
Yeah, that's what the guys up here that have them are running them on 17s. Same thing. Yeah, mini mags or stingers.
And then the other thing, I did try one of Advantage Arms' other recommended bullets for it, which I was real skeptical, so I only bought a 50-round box because I have horrible history with this ammo. But it's the Remington Golden Bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never had anything but bad luck in that. And I had a little mini Kaboom in that conversion in, with one of those. So I suppose
a Kaboom with 22 is a lot less traumatic than a Kaboom with 40.
Right.
Yeah. We had one, Matthew. Totally. Remember that double charge that blew my...
Yes, that's right. It was in your... Crap, what was that gun?
It was the Filipino Squires Bingham.
Right.
Model 20 or something.
That's right. It was like a double charge and it blew the extractor right out.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good times. Yeah, so you don't have like a Ruger 22-45 or Mark III or anything like that. You just have a conversion kit for your Glock. That's cool,
exactly.
Though.
Exactly. I mean, that's all I got at the moment, although most of the stuff I'm really interested in getting as far as rimfire pistols do come from Ruger.
Yep.
They have the SP-101
mm-hmm.
and the LCR. I've been lusting after those since they've come out. It's just been one of those things. I haven't had the money at the right time kind of thing. There's always been higher priorities. But
Ruger has always been able to make really good 22s. Their 10/22 and their Mark pistol series, as well as like you said, the SP-101 is a really good one, and they've got a couple others too. Like they make good rimfire guns. Well, they make good guns all around, but their 22s are particularly well made, I think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So,
well, that's cool. Well, why don't we jump over to Trevor and Owen and myself a little bit? Why don't we talk about what we like? For favorite, seeing as we're on the topic of favorite rimfire. So, Trevor, tell us your favorite rimfire rifle and your favorite rimfire pistol, if you don't mind.
Right now, definitely in bolt action, it's my Mark II.
Right. That is an accurate little gun.
Well, you say that, but I think it could be more accurate. Maybe it's the nut behind the trigger. I don't know.
It's almost as accurate as my 7.95. So,
exactly.
I mean, that's
it should be twice as accurate, right? It's not right that your $160 Marlin, pretty much bone stock 7.95 shoots as tight or often tighter groups than my Mark II with a heavy barrel does at 100 with CCI standard velocity ammo. But here we are. You know. And then in semi-auto, I absolutely love my Remington 597 VTR. Now, the Remington 597 has a pretty bad reputation because the base model that they put out, the one that's like $250 that comes with a 3-9 power scope, that one does tend to be a POS. Then you go up the chain a little bit, they seem to be a bit better quality. And I've had zero issues with my 597. I've got several of the 30-round mags. Only one is a dud. I call them, and they immediately sent me another one, no questions asked. They're unfortunately known to not lock the bolt open on the last shot, like the 10-round aluminum mag does. But other than that, it was able to take actual AR accessories. So I customized it a little bit with some Magpul stuff, and I put the Nikon M22 scope on it with bullet draw compensators. Love that gun. It doesn't make it out every day, but every time it makes it out, man, I enjoy shooting it and shooting it a lot. And I'm just running the 5.55 or the 3.33 through it, the Winchester bulk ammo stuff, and it's as good as anything else I put through it. And I went all the way to that M22 Winchester M22 stuff, which I think is just Dynapoint with a black tip.
Yeah, we were really disappointed with that, if I remember right.
Yeah, $50 we paid for a bulk pack of that, and it's no better than anything else.
Yeah.
Huh. So definitely, that's my all-time favorite semi-automatic 22 right now. I had your 10/22, Matthew, and it was just tricked out enough to be perfect. I love the idea of a Volkhorten 10/22 in a Boyd's Evolution SS stock. Yeah. But anyway, that being said, as far as handguns go, one of my first handguns was a Smith & Wesson Model 422. It was a neat little gun. It actually had the barrel on the bottom and the action on the top. You familiar with that one, guys?
I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's because I saw it.
Yeah, you probably saw it and shot it. Anyway, neat little gun. I don't know if I have a favorite 22 pistol. But I definitely would like to get a Advantage Arms one of these days when I stop working on all my other projects for my Glock 22, because then I would have a 22, a 9mm, and a 40 caliber, and even a 357 SIG all in the same frame if
you wanted to, yeah.
Yeah, if I wanted to, so.
Yeah, they're pretty neat. I had one for my 17 when I had my 17, and it was a neat kit. You know, you could just swap the slide, swap the mag, and you're off to the races shooting 22. I mean, I shot that Glock in 22 more than I did in
9mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are my favorites. I mean, you know, say what you will, but everybody's got to have some rimfire stuff. They're fun. They're cheap. You can, you know, they're almost all non-restricted, so you can take them anywhere. I mean, we were shooting frogs with them, for crying out loud. Like, I mean, it doesn't get much better in 22 for getting out and having fun.
You're right. Owen, what about you?
Goodness, do conversion kits count?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Well, that's probably my favorite, is my conversion kit for my AR-15.
I've totally forgot about mine. I don't even use it.
Really? You have one?
Yeah.
Filthy sent him one.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I've got to get out and try it in the Stag. I've tried it in the other ARs that I have, and mixed results, but I got to get out and try it in the Stag.
Well, there's just something about picking up a rifle that you're so familiar with and then being able to shoot 22 out of it. I don't know. Something about that.
Very.
It's better. Taking a 10/22 and trying to make it look like an AR when you can take a real AR and shoot 22 out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I haven't done a lot with it yet, just because I only have the one magazine. But once I get a few more mags, I'll probably end up using it a lot more for training at the range and stuff. Next to that, I mean, I have a 10/22 that I carry everywhere. When I, you know, if I want a rifle and I'm headed to the woods, I just grab my 22. I have a 10/22. But if I have to pick between it or one of my other 22s, it's probably the bolt action. It's probably the Savage Mark II. And that thing is a tack driver. I can hit anything with it. So they all have their purpose. It's hard to pick just one, because to me, every rifle I own has a purpose. I don't have extra rifles. And so it's hard to say this is the one. They all have a purpose. So
yeah.
What about favorite 22 pistol? You have a 22 pistol, right?
I just have one, and I can't say it's my favorite because it is the only one I have.
Okay. And so do you have one that's different that might be a favorite, or have you just not had enough experience with 22 pistols to say?
Well, I've never shot a 22 pistol other than yours and mine.
Oh, okay.
That, I haven't shot anything else.
Oh, you didn't get to play with my GSG?
That's
well,
what
he
I
has
have.
A GSG. Yeah.
Oh. Carry on.
Yeah, sorry, we hadn't actually gotten to the part where he says what it is, because, well, I knew what it was, so I just kept talking as if everybody knew, but apparently you guys can't read my mind, huh?
I thought that was gone. I thought you got rid of it. Oh, Brian Bulver got rid of his GSG.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's what I have, and I don't like to say I like it because it is a 1911.
It's not actually, but anyway.
Whatever. It handles like a 1911, and I don't particularly like it for that reason.
Oh, wow. But he owns it, so.
I'm a Glock guy, and to me, like, I'm not like you, Trevor. This is why I questioned you when you switched to your bleepity bleep 11.
2011, yes.
Well, if I say it, see, then I have to admit that's what it is.
Oh, man. It says right on the gun.
Well, when you started shooting that, I really questioned, are you going to have issues with the different grip angle? I cannot get used to the grip angle on a 1911. I pull out that gun. I just draw it and go to a sight picture, and I'm pointing, 3 feet in front of me. I can't get used to it because I shoot instinctively. I shoot from muscle memory, and I use my sights and all, but it does take adjustment. Not to mention, it's got more doodads and levers and doohickeys and safeties and I. Just drives me nuts because I never get the grip safety engaged, or I forget to flip down the manual safety, or
Or you don't have a magazine in it.
Or I don't have a magazine in it. Those reasons, I don't like it. But as far as a pistol, it works. I've never had any issues with it as far as malfunctions.
Oh yeah, see, my DSG until it was broken in would only run on expensive stuff like Stingers and mini mags. After 1,000 of those, it would eat anything until it got dirty. And Rimfire is dirty, so
Rimfire is filthy.
Yeah. So once it got dirty, it would malfunction. But when it was clean, I put anything through it after that.
I bought mine used, although it looked mint. But I bought it used, so I have no idea how many rounds were through it previous to my owning it.
So it was probably already broken and ready to go.
It very well could have been completely broken. Yeah.
Cool.
What about ammo, guys? Do we have?
Well, what about my favorite Rimfire guns?
Oh, we don't care.
All right, so let's talk about ammo then.
Of course we care. Ahead. This is your episode. I'm just overtired and forgot about you again because I have a tendency to do that.
Right, I'm just going to hang up on you just now. Just hold on. No, I'm just kidding.
I did that to you in another episode, right? Trying to move you on did. Before you had your chance to talk. So yeah. You just interrupt me when I talk. I just try and bypass you.
Well, hey, whatever works.
All right, fill us with your wealth of Rimfire-y goodness.
Well, I've owned that's not true. I've owned a lot of Rimfires through my life. I went through my list of guns just the other day, and I've owned more Rimfires percentage-wise than any other but then center fires. So I've owned more.
Your favorite's the Remington Viper, right?
It's the Remington Viper, definitely. It is the quintessential rimfire rifle.
Did I tell you? My realtor has that rifle and was trying to get me to find him 25 round mags for it.
They don't exist.
He's had it for years and he swears by it. No problems, no issues, loves it.
That's funny. Hey, every now and then you got to make a good one, I guess.
I guess.
I used to own one. It was a great little... No, it wasn't. Rimfire rifle, my favorite, is hands down the Marlin 795. I've actually owned four of them and currently own two. Well, sort of. I own one and Jewel owns one, even though she doesn't have her license yet. But she has claimed it for her own, so it is hers.
She's named it, so it's hers.
She has named it, yes. So it's definitely hers. But
Did I tell you that Pierre-Luc just bought one?
A 795?
Yeah.
Cool. Good for him.
Loves it. That's the second guy recently in the club to buy them. And no complaints. They're all
It's a great rifle. Out of the box, more accurate than a 10/22 that is also out of the box. That being said, my 795 out of the box was more accurate than my 10/22 after I'd accurized it. So that says something too, I think, about it. It's a great gun. It's not expensive, like Trevor said. Now they go for about $180. But it's just your standard, blowback 22 semi-automatic.
We should stop talking about them because since we started podcasting about them, they've gone up.
Price went up.
$30. you used to get it for $149.
Yeah, now they're $189, I think. So,
God.
Yeah.
Power crazy. Of podcasting.
I guess. Yeah. But it's cool. I like it. That's my favorite. And like we talked about a couple minutes ago, I mean, it's as accurate as Trevor's Savage Mark II. Now, like Trevor said, that could be the nut behind the trigger. I don't know. I haven't shot his Savage Mark II, and I know that I have shot Savage Mark IIs more accurately than my 7.95, but, you know, it could just be Trevor needs to find the right ammunition combination for his gun, because that's something we should talk about, too, in just a second.
Yeah.
But it's an extremely accurate rifle and extremely reliable. It's lightweight. You can scope it or not scope it. You can put a couple of different stocks on it. And, you know, I take it everywhere. As long as I'm going somewhere where I can legally have a gun, it comes with me, and I use it, you know, gravel pits or hunting or just out plinking pop cans with the nephews. It's a great time.
Can I jump in on a second for the 790? Yeah. The only reason I don't, well, not the only reason I don't have one, but I would build one in a second in a Boyd's Evolution SS Evolution stock. If only you could get them with a different barrel. I'd like a straight contour barrel. Doesn't necessarily even have to be much heavier than what's on there now, but I want a, like what's on my 795.
Well, what you need is a Marlin 7. I'm going to interrupt you. A Marlin 7000 is exactly what you need. It is a Marlin 795 with a slightly larger diameter barrel with no sights on it.
That's the one. Does it have the exact same receiver?
Exact. It is the exact same rifle with a bigger barrel. It's their quote unquote sniper version or accurate version. So it does exist. They don't make them anymore, but there are thousands and thousands of them out there. You just got to find one used and pick it up and steal the barrel off it.
Yeah, I'm on Cabela's right now. 179.
Yep. There you go. They exist.
$10 a year in 3 years.
Yep. So there you go. So that's my favorite rimfire rifle. Now, I've owned several others. A really other cool one is the Stevens 305. It's the 13-inch bolt-action Mark II clone that Stevens makes. That was a fun little gun. They made them just for Canada, of course, because in the States, nobody was going to pay an extra $200 for a tax stamp for a $200 rifle. So, but a little 13-inch bolt action was just fantastic for four-wheeling with and just hiking through the woods with and stuff. But I don't own that anymore. I should pick up another one. It was fun. But as for pistols, I used to say the Ruger Mark III 22-45 was my favorite 22 pistol until I got this little piece of crap Beretta from, and it's not a piece of crap is the thing. It just kind of looks, you know, at first that's what I thought of it. I'm like, oh my goodness, a little cheap little 22 pistol. It is amazing. I absolutely love this thing. It's about half the size if you don't count the barrel. Of the Mark III 22-45, and it is just as accurate. Like I was telling Trevor, I think it was actually on last week's episode. I like absolutely exactly where I put it, the bullet goes. Just phenomenal accuracy. Reliability is only about 98% to 99%. It's not 100%. It's got a couple of small feeding issues, but once you figure them out, it works very well. If you know, as long as I do my part, it does run 100%. So long as I don't mess up the mag change, but it's great. I love it. I highly recommend anybody who's looking for a small 22 pistol that's not terribly expensive, just to play around with, or maybe for the girlfriend or the wife or the kid or whatever who has, you know, slightly smaller hands. It's the Beretta Model 71. So check it out. I think Trigger Wholesales has them.
You know what I like about that gun? It has all the same features as the full size, like 92. It looks like a mini me of the 92.
It's exactly right. It looks almost exactly like a Beretta 92. Just smaller.
Yeah, you know, it's
which
hard
is
to
funny
make...
because I don't like a Beretta 92.
Here we are.
Sorry, Ken. I heard you trying to jump in there.
Oh no! I wasn't familiar with the 71, so I pulled it up on my Google and took a peek, and I like it.
It's a neat little gun, eh? Now, the one you're looking at probably has a nice short barrel, nice 3.5-inch barrel, just barely sticks out past the slide. Here in Canada, we have this silly law that we can't have barrels any shorter than 4.2 inches. So this one actually has a 6-inch barrel on it, which looks kind of ridiculous. But there are some 4.2-inch barrels coming, which will just, the barrel will stick out slightly from the end of the slide. So it'll look a lot better once I get that. But gotcha. Yeah, it's a great little gun. Check it out. So Let's talk. That's funny. Jewel just kind of wandered into the room and she said, "I might even try it." And she doesn't like handguns very much, so that's something to be said. When I first got it, she actually picked it up on her own without me handing it to her. And goes, "Oh, that's a neat little gun."
Cool.
That was a nice little step for her. But yeah, let's talk real quick about, and then we'll go into the email because we are running a little bit long, about ammunition and rimfire rifles or rimfire firearms. Let's Ken, maybe you can kind of give us a little briefing on why it's so important to find the right ammo for your gun.
Sure. Well, especially in if you have a semi-automatic, whether it's handgun or rifle, those are the pickiest.
Yep.
As far as just reliability goes, you have to figure out which ammo, and a lot of times that's bullet weight oriented, I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, brand and whatever else. Every different firearm, and you could even have two of the same model that might have some different preferences. As far as, like, just for example, for a really long time, all I could feed through my conversion for my AR-15 was the Federal Bulk Pack, which is all right ammo, but it's not like stellar. And I wanted to feed it CCI Mini Mags, but it took a really long time before they would reliably feed into mm-hmm. the chamber.
Yep.
So, and then also just you'll have accuracy differences, and that's true if, you know, between center fire and rim fire. You're going to yep. have, based on just your firearm's going to, for some reason, like a particular projectile going a particular velocity.
You're right, and it's amazing the differences just between name brands. You can have the exact same 36 grain projectile, you know, advertised velocity of 1,280 feet per second, and you can have one that your rifle will absolutely love where you're shooting, you know, an inch at 50 yards, and then you just switch over the name brand. It's the exact same specifications, but now you're shooting 4 inches, and there's no way to, you know, the rifle just simply doesn't like that ammo. I don't know right. what the scientific explanation is behind it. All I know is that you find the ammo that your gun likes and you buy it in bulk.
Mm-hmm. I have done a little bit of reading just based on the 10/22, but I'm pretty sure this probably applies across the board for rimfire firearms in general, is that the 22 chamber, 22 long rifle chamber, has a lot of variation between manufacturers.
Oh, that's true. Yep, that would make
sense.
And
that makes a huge difference. This particular book, I think it's one of the Gun Digest books for like modifying your 10/22. It was specifically talking about 10/22 chambers, but how like the target model comes with a different chamber than what you find in the bone stock 10/22s, and how that really made a difference in your ammo selection.
Right.
Certain things that kind of shocked me was, or that to learn was, like the CCI mini mags are obviously slightly bigger in diameter than, say, like Federal Bulk Pack.
Yeah, that contributes to the accuracy because it forms in the barrel a little bit more. It gives it a tighter seal.
Right.
And it
right.
will, I don't know, swaging isn't the right word, but it obturates, I think. It swells almost to the form of the barrel and it, the bigger it is, the more it engages the rifling and it gives you better results. I actually have a die from Neil Waltz. It's a 22 resizing die, and you put in 22 ammo, and you can actually resize the diameter by squishing the top of it. You squish the top of the bullet down, and it, you know, expands into this die out to 224, which
Very
really
cool.
increases the accuracy too. It's a neat little product. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Bullet diameter is going to make a big difference in accuracy.
And then I've also heard of people that go to like rimfire matches will take, you know, a certain lot of ammo and separate it out by weight.
I've heard of that too.
They're reloading scales. Yeah, and just separate out like groups of rounds that are so many grains of this, you know, and they'll be able to shoot more accurate groups just by combining those particular weights together.
Keeping the consistency the same. So I've also heard that measuring the rim thickness is also another thing that people do for better accuracy. Right. But both of those things are beyond my needs for 22 shooting. I mean, this is we're talking people who shoot like, you know, half MOA with their 22s, which is ridiculous for a rim fire. So you know, that's definitely not something that I would say most of our listeners are into. But it is interesting to know that you can go that far if you have that sort of eye for detail and that requirement for that sort of precision. If that's something that you're after, you can do it with rimfire.
Right. You know, and the coolest thing tying into that, I was talking with Sticks from the Guns and Pop. Politics and Guns podcast. And we were talking about N22s, and we were talking about how cool it is with a lot of rimfire rifles. You can trick them out to an extent that you're spending a fraction on your, say, 10/22 or say like a Savage Mark II, you can trick those out pretty cool, but you're spending a fraction of what you would spend on, say, a Remington 700.
That's right. Yeah.
And if you want to go all out for that, like you say, chase that quarter MOA accuracy, you can do that. And you can do it at a much cheaper cost.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, that was a good briefing on that, actually. Very well done. We're going to move into listener feedback. We got a couple of emails that are in reference to 22, so we're going to kind of read them, and then Ken will have your reply if it's something you can, you know, jump on, and then and we'll go from there.
Okay.
Now, Trevor has actually left. He apparently is tired. I don't know, you know, whatever, I guess. I actually messaged him and said, okay, hold on, we'll say goodbye to you properly, you know, whatever. You know, no, he's like, no, click, he's gone.
It's just good for the listeners to know what's really important to Trevor.
That's right, and it's not them.
And it's not them.
That's right. You have to understand, Ken, once you leave, you're under the bus. That's how it goes here on this show.
As it should be.
That's right. So, Owen, why don't you bring us the first email if you got it pulled up there, and then we'll kind of reply to it and move on.
All right. This is from John. This is, okay, so here's the deal. About 2 months ago, I did the course to get my RPAL. They say I'll have it by October 5th. Now I want to get a few guns to start. I have enough saved, about 2,300 so far. I'm just not sure where to start. I'm hoping the Norinco 1911 deal is still on.
Yeah, I've got one of those deals for you. It'll only cost you $2,200. Just send me an EMT. I'll work it out for you.
But I would like a tactic-cooled rifle, maybe 22 long rifle just for fun, and a 22 long rifle handgun. I'm interested in IPSC and 3-gun and want guns geared so to that just as much as for fun. So I have been looking at 1911, and in brackets 2011, style guns and Glocks and M&Ps. So what are your opinions? Where is my money best spent? I'd love to hear the input and everyone's point of view on where to start. P.S. Trevor, my friend who I have gone shooting with a lot in the past has an STI 1911. I love the thing. So in my opinion, you made a great buy, although I have yet to shoot a Glock.
Well, sadly, Trevor's gone, so he can't regale you with how cool the 1911 really is.
Well, I was just going to speak for Trevor.
Right. Okay. You do that. That's a great idea. I'm sure he's going to love this.
Go buy a Glock. Don't waste your money on a 1911.
There you go. That's what he would have said a year ago. Let's be honest.
Even 2 months ago, he would have said that.
That's right. Well, let's start first of all with the 22 stuff because Ken's here with us, and then we'll go into the IP6 stuff. So what are your recommendations, Ken, for a first 22 rifle and a first 22 handgun?
One thing that I learned from Brian Bolivar was...
Whoa. You learned something from Brian?
I did. Well, it's
That's
about
cool.
Canadian laws.
There you go.
Something that I wouldn't have been exposed to otherwise, necessarily. So I was talking to him, and I can't remember if this was like a private conversation or if we were talking about this on his show, but we were talking about tactical 22s. And I was telling him, hey, why don't you just get, a dedicated upper for his service rifle. And the point that he brought up to me was that at least according to where he lives, he would only be able to shoot that at the range.
That's correct. AR-15s in Canada are a restricted firearm. We can only shoot them at an authorized range.
Right. And he said that applied as well to the Smith & Wesson M&P-15s.
Uh-huh. Yep. They called it a variant, so.
Which shocked me because it's completely incompatible with any other AR-15 parts.
It looks like an AR-15, and that's close enough.
That's scary enough. So.
Yeah.
I would honestly... And that would make me, if I had to deal with that in my own situation, I would probably steer away just so that I was able to use it in whatever venue I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, you've got so many different options. Like you were saying, there's the Remington.
Yep, the Remington Model, 597.
It's sort of AR-15 like.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Ruger SR-22 rifle version, and which I think that's basically just. I'm trying to think of the name of the company that makes the kit that goes on that. But if you want, you could actually just buy that kit and put it on your 10/22.
Yeah, that's an option too. I mean, 22s can be tricked out to look tactical, without a whole lot of money put into it, which is a good option. If you want a tactical rifle, Trevor would beg to differ probably. He'd probably say go with the Remington 597 because he has one and he really likes it. And I have to agree, it is a really cool rifle and it's actually very accurate for what it is and for the price that you pay for it. And that would be something I would look at the Remington 597, the tactical version that they have, but also have a look at the 10/22. It's the most popular 22 rifle, 22 semi-automatic rifle, because it has so many aftermarket parts. You can change that out any way you want. They're very modular, very easy to work on. I'd give that a really good look.
Now, you could go a different direction in tactical and get something like a Savage Mark II and trick it out with a Boyd's as a tactical stock.
Yep.
Which kind of looks like I'm trying to think of what it looks like more like a HS Precision or, it looks like... a police sniper stock.
Right, yes.
You could pick it up for like $90.
Yep, and you're right, that is a completely other direction that you could do.
But it's still, to me, that's still kind of in a neat tactical kind of direction.
Yep.
Just different type of shooting. But yeah, get a 20 MOA base for that thing and...
Yeah, that would be cool. So what about pistol? What would you say pistol-wise? What would you recommend for a first 22 pistol?
Going back to Ruger, SR-22 pistol, from what I've heard from everybody that's actually shot one or owned one, they eat anything. You know, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, rimfire firearms can be real picky in what they like to eat. The SR-22 supposedly eats anything.
I don't know if the SR-22 is actually legal in Canada because I think the barrel is too short.
Not available. Okay.
I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm just looking it up now. But the Ruger 22-45 is a great, it's a great pistol.
Absolutely.
You know, if you want a revolver, go with the Ruger SP-101. Anything that's kind of based on the high power. So you could look at the Browning Buckmark. You could look at what's that other one that uses those same magazines? The Ruger and High Power. High Power is the other one. So those ones are all very accurate if that's what you're looking for. If you're looking for something more tactical, then, you know, maybe even if you decide on a Glock, like Owen recommended earlier for your centerfire pistol, just get an Advantage Arms conversion kit and then just swap out the top, and then you can run 22 that way.
And you're running your same trigger and
that's right.
Everything.
Yeah, which is really important. That being said, for other guns to buy, John, you pretty much nailed what I would recommend. Glocks, M&Ps, maybe a Ruger. You know, look at the Ruger SR9 if you're looking for something a bit less expensive, but doesn't look like you are with the amount of money you got saved up there. Any of those are going to be good. Pick what you want, really. Try them out if you can, and then, you know, go from there.
And as far as the that Norinco deal he's talking about, 1911, I have really good things about those guns. I know a couple people around here who have them, and they like them. They shoot very well. They're very reliable. You know, so, and they're very inexpensive. If you get that deal from Canada Ammo, it's a very good deal.
That's right. Now, if you're going into IPSC and you go with the Norinco, remember you will be in the classic division. So you'll be, if you're running a 45, you'll be in major. So only 8-round magazines, which is fine. I mean, that's a division to be in. If you want to go in production, go with the Glock or the M&P is probably your best bet. And if you'd like to go standard or you know, heaven forbid, open, then go with the 1911 style firearm at that point, because those are the ones that shoot the fastest, I guess, in terms of, you know, trigger reset, and you can put optics and all that other fun stuff on it. But you kind of have to decide what you want to do with IPSC first before we can recommend a gun for you, because, you know, there's so many different divisions and they all require different gear. So cool. All right, let's move on to the next one from Edmund. He writes, "Hi, guys. Seeing as episode 22 is fast approaching, I'd like to suggest that you dedicate it to the mighty 22 Rimfire, Trevor's favorite." Well, Edmund, we did. So thank you. You were one of their listeners that recommended this, and so we have done it for you guys because we like you, and, well, mostly because I like 22s. you could ask listeners to submit their favorite 22 Rimfire firearm with explanations of stories. Yeah, we could have, but we didn't have time. I'll start off with my CZ-452 with a factory 16-inch barrel. I love it as it is very accurate, lightweight, reliable, and easy handling. It is now a bit rare as CZ has continued manufacturing 16-inch barrels. It typically shoots half to three-quarter inch groups at 50 meters and 1 to 1.5 inch groups at 100. The fit and finish is superb, the action is butter smooth, and it reliably feeds and fires all ammunition that I've put through it. The bolt cycles quickly and easily compared to other rifles I've shot. Being a bolt action, it is capable of using the whole spectrum of 22 ammunition. It has shot CCI Velocitors and Stingers all the way down to CCI CBs. It is even reliably fed 22 shorts from its box magazine. Being a popular rifle, you can get many accessories for it. I have a Yo Dave trigger installed and a couple of 15-round K-Mag metal magazines. The CZ-452, I used to have one. I didn't have the 16-inch barrel. I had a 20-inch barrel. And you're right, it was accurate. I really did enjoy that rifle. It was just a bit too heavy for what I wanted it for. My favorite hunting memory with this rifle occurred back during last fall's trip when we spotted a spruce grouse about 50 meters away. We stopped the truck, I dismounted, loaded up, and put a round through the base of its head. It was a one-shot bang flop. I was using cheap bulk Winchester Experts, which seemed to do well on my 452. My favorite moment on the range occurred when I was shooting off the bench with front and rear bags at 100 meters. I was very surprised and pleased that it shot a 5/8 inch group. Wow. Four of the shots were within 5/16 of an inch. I have attached pictures of the target with one zoomed out to show there were no flyers hidden under the ruler. I'd love to hear about other listeners' favorite 22 rimfire firearms and their stories. Keep fighting the good fight and podcasting. And that came to us from Edmund in Vancouver, BC. So, Edmund, thank you for the story. I wish we could have gotten other listeners to send in their stories about their favorite 22s, and I guess they still can if listeners want to write in about what they like about their rimfires or what they don't like, or maybe they have a favorite one that they want to talk about. Feel free, and we'll feature it on some of the upcoming episodes.
This next one, I think, is from Keenan, and he must be a twin brother to John.
Oh, this is the exact same email. Yeah, so I wonder if Keenan sent it or if John sent it. So this we're blaming on Trevor, mostly because he did the show notes this week. So Trevor, thank you for messing that up.
Well, I'll jump on to the next one then.
Cool.
It's from Brian. He says, hi guys, love the podcast. I heard Trevor say something about a scope for his 17 HMR that is designed for the 17 HMR. If this is true, what scope do you have? I would like one for my Marlin XT 17 HMR.
So, Trevor, tell us about this scope. Oh, you left because you hate the listeners.
Yeah.
Oh, because you were tired.
Ask him about that scope he was talking about, too.
That would have been nice to know about, because I don't know much about it, but, you know, that would have been really cool to hear about. So, chalk that up to Trevor. Not caring about the listeners.
No, I actually have. Well, I can talk about one scope I had experience with, because I had a Savage in 17 HMR, and I had a scope that was had the turrets calibrated for 17 HMR.
Uh huh.
And that was the BSA Suite.
The
17.
BSA Suite. Yes, I've heard of those. Yep.
So that was an excellent scope, and with the combination between it and the rifle was dead nuts accurate. I think the farthest I ever actually shot it for any accuracy was like something like 75 meters.
Okay.
But I had no problem hitting like a little – 1-inch gong on one of those rimfire swingers.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yep.
And so that scope was great until the day it wasn't.
I understand. Then it just
and
stopped
I don't
working.
Know
huh?
What happened to it? I don't know if in the safe it just kind of ended up falling over onto the scope or just taking a little bit of a knock. But yeah,
it stopped working.
All
huh?
of a sudden, one day, it stopped working. I was shooting at some prairie dogs, and I noticed. I'm like, "What the hell?" I'm like, "I must be splitting this prairie dog's hair," you know, like. I don't know what's going on here. And then it wasn't until I got home that I noticed that the one of the turrets was pretty much spinning freely.
Mm.
So
that'll do it.
Take it for what it's worth. If you can be really safe with that scope and not bang it around, might be a good choice, but might want to go in another direction if you want something a little bit more, I don't know if reliable is the right word, but you know,
rugged,
tough.
Maybe tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, Brian, maybe Trevor's listening right now. Well, he is, because he does that. He listens to all the shows, especially when he bugs out early. So, Trevor, maybe you could send Brian an email, or maybe you could remember to mention it on the next show, what scope you have for your 17 HMR, and, you know, if you like Brian enough to do that. So, Brian, you'll see how much Trevor likes you next episode. So, this next one comes to us from Bill. He writes, hey, guys, I enjoyed your show. Which I discovered through the video interview you did with Rod at Civil Advantage. I've only listened to one episode so far, but I'm really enjoying the content and information. I'm getting back into shooting after being away for many years. What do you think about a SIG P226 for a first pistol? Also, for an AR-15 choice, what would you recommend for a first AR? Thanks, Bill in Winnipeg.
Hmm.
Cool.
So go ahead, Owen. What do you think about a SIG 226?
Well, I've never shot a SIG, but I did have a Norinco SIG clone, which is supposed to be like an exact copy.
It's not.
It's not.
I used to have one too.
Yeah, it's not exact, but quite similar. I did handle a SIG. I want to say it was Foley's. Doesn't Tim Foley shoot a...
I believe Foley does have a SIG. Yes, I'm not sure if it's a P226, but he does have a SIG. I've shot a P226.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah.
I like them as a first pistol. I'm not sure. I wouldn't really say there's going to be one gun that's going to be better or not.
Oh, sure, there is.
Know.
There's all kinds that are better than the others.
they're better, but can you say that this is not the pistol for him? I mean, you can't.
I probably could.
Really?
Yeah, I think so, Bill. You haven't been shooting for a while, and first of all, why do you want the P226? Now, there's a couple. Do you want it for IPSC or any other competitive shooting, or do you want it just for fun? If you want it just for fun, then it might be okay for you. But here's the other question. Do you like it because it's beautiful? Because the SIG P226, in my opinion, is a beautiful pistol. It looks amazing. And I can't shoot them worth crap. And a lot of other people say the same thing. They are a hard gun to master for some reason. I've heard that from, like I said, several different people who owned P226s. They're a hard gun to shoot. So bear that in mind. If you're willing to put in the range time to kind of master the learning curve that comes along with this gun, then yes, get it. It's beautiful. It's a little expensive, but it is a great firearm, very reliable, looks great, and I'm sure you can learn to shoot it well. If you want a gun, you're getting back into it, and you want it more for competition or just kind of picking up the basics again, plinking and stuff, I'd probably go for something a little bit easier to shoot, maybe a Glock or an M&P9. That's up to you.
Those will be less expensive starting
out.
Those
will be half the price.
And easier to move if you decide you don't like it.
That's right. Much easier to sell again. And then you could put that money back towards the P226 if your heart's set on it. Like I said, the P226 is a great gun. But, with those warnings there. As for an AR-15, what would I recommend for a first AR? A Norinco is actually not a bad choice. If you're looking for something that's not terribly expensive, they're about $800, I think. The other one that I saw for just over $800, where did I just see that? It was a DPMS, and it was from a Canadian retailer, and it was for just over $800. I can't remember where I saw that. I wish I could find that again. I'll look around for it, and I'll pop back in later if I find it. But Owen, do you have a recommendation for first AR-15?
Yeah, it's probably going to be the Norinco. I mean, unless you're really set on buying something that already has a handguard, a railed handguard and that sort of thing, with a flat top and pop up sights. Really, have your mind set on that. That's what I'm trying to say. You can't really beat the Norincos, and I've heard good things about them. Brian Bolivar, he'll tell you that it's probably the best thing you could buy, because I know he shoots one in competition for service rifle.
Wow.
Yeah. The quality on them continues to get better. I mean, from what I've heard, again, I've never shot one. I don't have one. I'm considering getting one, though, if I ever get the money set aside for one. The more of them come into Canada, the better the quality is getting. They're kind of starting to get it figured out over there and getting the quality up to where it should be. So I don't think it's a bad first AR. Of course, if you want to support, Canadian, you can buy an NEA.
Yep.
And nothing wrong there either. A little on the heavy side, but, again, good AR. The AR platform really is something that's kind of been mastered. It's kind of been figured out.
It doesn't really matter what you go with. It's probably going to be a good one. Probably.
Right. Yep.
Do a bit of research on the one that you decide you want to get. And then once you look it up, and if it's great, then go for it. And if not, then pick another one.
I probably wouldn't recommend building one for your first.
No, I wouldn't either. Get one out of the box that works first, and then go ahead and try to build one.
Yeah. Then you can have a model, you have a copy, you have something you can look at, you can take apart, play with, figure it out. Yeah.
And if you're determined to build it, only build your lower. Don't build your upper.
Yeah.
First. That would be a definite mistake or road to frustration.
Definitely. The lower you can build without any specialized tools, the upper you definitely need special tools to put all together. So,
yeah.
Cool.
I forget who was talking, but are Stag arms available?
Yes.
There?
We can get those.
I've had two Stag arms, and at least the uppers, and I really like those. I've had really good luck with those.
Well, good. We'll pass it on to him too, and see maybe he'll look into that too. Very cool.
All right. Okay. So the next one comes from Rob. He says, "Hi, fellas. Trevor, that Glock sucks, and I hate you." Just kidding. It was exactly as you and Matt said. The trigger was definitely spongy, but it was very accurate. More accurate than I am, anyway. I'm the world's worst pistol shot. I took both the Glock and my new NEA 15 to my weekly close quarter CQB, I guess we'll call it, shoot last night at the Frontenac Rifle and Pistol Club in Kingston, Ontario. I did okay with the pistol, but the rifle is a new build, and it's giving me trouble. At first, it wouldn't completely cycle, which I fixed by means of bending the gas tube inside the upper to better accommodate the gas key on the bolt carrier group. Now, I can fire about 40 rounds, and it stops. It is breaking primers, and I'm getting bits in between the bolt and carrier. So back to my Minarenko for now. Enough of my troubles. Thanks again for the show and for reading my email last week. Thanks, Rob Lucas.
Cool. Well, sorry to hear that it's giving you trouble.
This must be one he built, is it? He calls it his new NEA 15, but...
I don't know. Was he building one? I don't remember.
I don't know.
The memory of yogurt.
Yeah. Yeah, he said too bad. But the rifle is a new build, and so.
Oh, okay. Well, here's some breaking news, and it's not breaking at all. But for the last three emails, there, people asking about the good ARs, the DPMS Panther Arms Oracle. It's available at the Wild West Gun Shop, which is out west, I believe, for $875 right now.
Okay.
So that's a fantastic price on a AR-15 in Canada.
That is.
The only you need sights. It doesn't come with any sort of sighting system, but other than that, it's good to go.
Neither does the NEA.
And what's that?
Neither does the NEA.
Oh, okay. Neither does the NEA. And this one is $200 cheaper.
Anyway.
So, have a look at that. So I guess the next one, there was no questions in that one from Rob, was there?
Nope.
No, just kind of letting it. Okay, so the next one comes to us from Spencer. And Spencer sent us a bit of a novel here. So
Spencer, is this Spencer the whale?
I believe it is. And this email is as big as a whale.
Okay.
Hey, guys, it's been a while since I wrote y'all. I did a Trevor-like amount of travel this past month or so, and I haven't had much free time lately, so I thought I'd send you an entire... Oh, no, he didn't say that. An entire novel. I have been keeping up with shows, though, and I thought I'd drop you a line, more like a cable. First, the cool stuff. I know you couldn't seem to come up with a reason to own an AR-10 in Canada, but I just bought a Smith & Wesson M&P-10, and it's one of the most amazing firearms I own. This gun can do anything. Long range, no problem. I haven't been able to really stretch its legs, but with a $100 scope, it was doing MOA groups at 200 yards off a rest. Close quarters, easy. At an indoor range at 25 yards with backup irons, it was in a pie plate size group as fast as I could pull the trigger. That huge bolt carrier group just soaks up the recoil. Hunting? No problem, if I actually hunted. A 308 is good to go in all 50 states. They even sell it camo-dipped if you want it that way. Competition? I think it would do really well in 3-gun. It's under 8 pounds out of the box, and it's been 100% reliable so far. It's also fully ambidextrous, which would work well for lefties, too. Ammo for 308 is still a bit pricey, but I found some Milsert for 50 cents a round, so it's getting back to reasonable again. It also takes a lot of standard AR parts in lower end, and furniture is standard too. I already swapped out the cheapo stock and handguard and buttstock. The only tough thing right now is finding mags that work. Supposedly, there are 30-round P-Mags for it, but they are obviously made of unobtainium and are nowhere to be found right now. The DPMS 20-round metal mags work really well, though, and if you can you can find those for about $30 a pop at Midway, so even that's not a real problem. The best part is that it's an AR-10 from a major manufacturer, so it'll have support from a lot of third-party vendors. It might actually standardize the AR-10 platform enough so that we'll have some real parts interoperability. Nice, like we do with AR-15s. Also, it was only $1,200, which is less than some of Smith's mainstream ARs. That is a fantastic price. Wow. This would definitely be the one gun to have if you only had one gun. And right now I'm agreeing with them. If they were non-restricted up here in Canada, that is a fantastic one gun to rule them all. Mm-hmm. Second, I'm glad you guys found the Student of the Gun podcast. There are some of the best podcasts out there right now and pretty entertaining to boot. Not as funny as you guys or those lead-talking dudes from Tennessee. Yep, that's how you say it. But a good listen and full of lots of useful information. There's also another new podcast that just popped up called Handgun Radio Podcast on the same network. The host, Ryan, seems extremely knowledgeable about all kinds of handguns, and his podcasts are excellent. So if you like the technical and historical side of handguns, plus he's out of Maine, so that's almost like Canada, right?
Pretty much. Northern Maine, at least.
Hey, I can throw a rock and hit Maine.
Me too. So, well, almost.
Yeah. Owen can. Yeah, well. Almost. I can definitely shoot it from here.
Yeah.
last, for the CCW episode you keep promising, which we did last week, Spencer, so thanks for sending this in on time, I just wanted to give you my take on the question of why I carry. There are quite a few studies that have asked violent criminals what factors deter them from committing a crime. The answer isn't usually fear of the police or being sent to jail. The number one answer is almost always that they are afraid of running into an armed victim capable of resisting. This makes a lot of sense from their viewpoint, since the odds of police being present when they commit a crime is vanishingly small, and most hardened criminals look at jail as a second home, or maybe even a first. Now, just imagine that every single person they might choose as a victim was armed in some way and trained to resist their attack. How many criminals would actually commit to an attack against a victim who they know could shoot them? My guess is not many at all. After all, street thugs don't try to mug cops just to get their wallets. Here in the States, we have the right to keep and bear arms. But with every right comes a responsibility. I feel that people who refuse to take responsibility for their own self-defense are actually encouraging criminals to commit violent crimes. They provide more potential, soft targets, which simply encourages violent criminals to continue their behavior. To my mind, I have a responsibility to not be a victim through inaction. Every person who can defend themselves, even through non-lethal means, is a deterrent to violent criminals and is helping to reduce the overall violent crime for the society we live in as a whole. Robert A. Heinlein said it the best, an armed society is a polite society. And that comes to us from Spencer in Smyrna. So, Spencer, very well said that last bit there about the CCW stuff. I really 100% agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Ken, do you carry concealed? Or can you, I guess, even is the question. Can you even?
I have a permit, and I did a lot before I went into the Army,
mm-hmm.
but I cannot carry on to post.
Right.
So when I go to work, and now I'm actually living on an Air Force base.
So that makes it really, you can't actually.
Then I commute down to my Army post.
Right.
And yeah, that totally complicates the hell out of it. So
it certainly would.
For the time being, until I move off base again, I haven't been doing it.
But you're definitely a proponent for it then, obviously.
Yeah, very much. So for the exact same reasons as the Spencer. I'm sorry, I've already spaced his name. Yeah, Spencer saying in his email, I do think it's a responsibility. If you have the legal means to carry, then you should, just based on your ability to reduce crime. Now, I'm not like the type to advocate for vigilantism. But hey, if somebody tries to kill you for whatever they can get off of you.
It's perfectly reasonable that you try to kill them right back then.
Yeah. And then if you do, you're stopping them from doing it to the next person.
That's right. And technically, of course, we're not out to kill anybody. We're out to stop threats. If your life is in danger, you stop the threat, and you do that the best way that you can. So we don't advocate you go out and kill anybody, but you stop the threat if your life is in danger.
Exactly.
Yep. Very good. Okay, well, this next one, Owen, sent to us by Jason Phillip, but was written by Bill Campbell. So way to go, Jason. Thank you for being lazy enough to send us somebody else's email that he wrote to you.
All right. I was in Radium last week for the four-day shoot. Whoa. Vic Thomas and his gang, Darlene, Ryan, Mark, Shannon, Doug, Beth, Jeff, Roger, et al., really outdid themselves. Best targets I've seen in Radium. Radium?
Yeah. Radium, sure. We'll go with that. Sure.
And the food was also the best I've had there. Vic was a pig, had a pig roast.
Vic was a pig roast.
Okay.
Close enough.
So Vic was the pig, now we know. Vic had a pig roast lined up for the Friday night and a prime rib roast for the Saturday night. I don't want to waste space lauding the results. Let's just say, bravo, Vic, bravo. If you weren't there, then you missed out. I don't
usually
do.
I got to tell you, pig roasts are amazing. That's all I have to say about that.
I'm sure they are. I don't usually do this, but I will be attaching some pictures of the course. I don't think people realize what a gem of a location this is. The terrain offers everything, and the views are spectacular. The two course pictures will show the view from the east looking west and from the west looking east. I don't think you will find anything like it anywhere else, period. Congrats to Wayne Carlson for winning the BC Provincials, and congrats to Wayne Norton for winning the Bugaboo Blast. 8 users moved up in class, and 4 users moved down in class. Congratulations to... Now I know why you got me to read this, because of all the names in it.
You could probably just say congratulations to everybody who participated, and then
pretty
go
much.
To the next one.
These are all the people. He lists all the people who moved up in class. And a special attaboy to Jacob Larson moving from E-class to B-class in one move.
Wow, that's a big move.
I would say so.
I'm guessing, yeah.
He's probably been practicing.
Probably, yeah.
The new stats have been submitted to the webmaster, so look for the website to reflect those changes soon. Please check your class on the website before your next registered shoot so there are no surprises. Congratulations to all of you. Thanks, Bill Campbell, who didn't send this in, but wrote it.
But Jason did, yes. Yeah. So thank you, Jason, and pass on a thank you to Bill for... that. But yeah, no, that was, you know, talking about the BC Provincials. So that's really cool. And, I'm glad everybody had a good time, and it sounds like it was a fantastic showing. So thank you. Thank you very much. I know I made fun of you, but I'm still thanking you. So, this next one comes to us from, we don't know. It was sent to us from a numbered email account. So there was no name on it. Huh. And he did not sign it off. All he wrote was, what I did with guns, 10 yards, 5 shots, SR-1911, off a bag. And then he included a picture of his target, which was a great target. I mean, pretty much all the bullets went in a ragged hole, a couple of them just a little bit off. And Trevor has a note here, great, you shot one nice group all week, way to go. So again, Trevor showing how much he loves the listeners by making fun of them for sending in good targets. So, but whoever you are, thank you for sending it in. I mean, 1911s are accurate guns, for sure. I mean, with that single action trigger, they better be. But yeah, thanks. I like looking at pictures of targets, even if Trevor hates you. So this next bit, this is the iTunes review bit, and you know how to do this, Owen. Go ahead. Yeah.
Do I have to say who it is?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's Rosnator. Rosnator?
Rosnator.
Rosnator?
Yeah, sure.
I hate when people do that.
He's got an 8 in his name.
Oh, that just burns me. Of course, I'm the guy when I text, I include all the proper punctuation and periods and spaces and capitalization. Yeah. It takes me 4 hours to write a text to somebody.
But you can read it.
The compound, he says, Rosinator says, the compound word title is designed to confuse. It should be slam and fire, as it is cheap shot and gun talk. No turnips were in the production of this show. I think that's a shot at me.
It might be. But yeah, no, he's kind of right. We're mostly cheap shots on each other and some of the listeners. And then we talk guns, but yeah, no, thanks to Rosinator for writing that in, I guess.
If you would like to get on this portion of the show, go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, rating and a review.
You don't have to leave a 5-star rating, but it'd be really appreciated if you did.
Oh, you have to.
Okay. You have to.
If you're not Owen going said, to, don't go.
No, we're not. Yeah, that's right. Don't go if you're not going to, and we won't read it if you do.
That's right. If you make it funny, you might hear it on the show. Yeah, so thank you very much to all those who already have.
Very cool.
Shout-outs. Do you have any shout-outs?
Well, it looks like Trevor does.
Oh, those are mine.
Oh, those are yours?
Yep.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize that.
Yep.
I do not have any shout-outs. I do want to thank Ken for joining us this week.
Absolutely.
It was awesome having you on. You have a wealth of knowledge on 22s and... We clearly could have gone a whole lot more, but you know, time is running out. But thank you for joining us. It was fantastic.
Thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this ever since you guys contacted me.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again sometime, or maybe do a Rimfire podcast on your, because you've kind of let that drop. You got to pull that back, man.
I know.
You and me could put off an awesome 22 Rimfire show. Just saying.
That would be cool. I already enjoyed that a lot.
Cool.
So, yeah, I got a couple shout-outs. Sort of. One is a shout-out. One is a quasi-shout-out. My first shout-out is to Sticks and Stone Survival over on the Politics and Guns podcast. Politics and Guns podcast. Whoa, it's getting late.
It clearly is.
He contacted me kind of last minute this past week, and needed someone to fill in on a podcast. So him and I sat down and recorded a podcast this week. So...
So you can't even do your own podcast,
right.
But you'll go and do others.
I know. It's awful. But yeah, so it was on survival. Maybe I'm not supposed to give it away, but it was on survival rifles and rifles in survival, using rifles, you know, for survival. So,
oh, cool. I can't wait to listen to that one.
It was good. So check out Politics and Guns. I don't know if the show's up yet or when exactly it's going to be coming out. But yeah, check that out. Appreciate it. Him and
Very
I had,
cool.
a, had a good time. We tried not to let the, you know, the show just devolve into hunting stories, but
that's hard not to do sometimes. Hunting stories are fun. Did I ever tell you the time? But no, I'm just kidding.
And the only other thing I wanted to let the listeners know that Slipstream Weapon Lubricant, which a lot of you may have heard from Trevor in the past, and because he puts it on everything, including his toast and in the coffee, is now available in Canada, and Press Adventures has some on the website, so go check that out and buy some if you want it, because
the website's just simply presscheckventures.com.
presscheckventures.com.
very so cool. You get your Slipstream. It's all
Canada.
Slippery and stuff.
Awesome. I'm sure that's what they're, you know,
that's their slogan.
That's their slogan.
Yeah, it's all slippery and stuff. If it's not, it should be, really. Come on. Cool.
All right. Well, good. Yeah, and to finish out here, join CSSA, NFA, our associations. Check out Gun Owners of Canada. Like us on Facebook, because we still only have 155 likes.
No, it's more than that. I just haven't changed the numbers yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well,
that's
still
like 2 weeks ago. We got like 170 now, I think. So
still
we need
not
more.
Enough.
No, we need more.
Yes, absolutely.
The local library still has 100 more than us. Come on, guys. We can do it. We can do it. Brian, you stay out of this is all I want to say about that.
Trey, start something again. When you come to the 3-gun, I'll break your legs.
And not in a way that you like. I'm just saying. I don't know what that means, but we're going to roll with it.
So, yeah, be sure to check out all the other great shows on both the CRR Network and the Crusader Podcast Network. And
go check out Ken's podcasts.
Absolutely.
They're cool, too.
That's right.
So where can listeners find your podcast, Ken?
Both of them can be found on iTunes. They're both available on iTunes, either the Rimfire Podcast or Modern Rifleman Radio.
Cool.
You could also go to the website. You could listen there directly, which is therimfirepodcast.com. or modernriflemanradio.com. And I think on the – if you want to go to the Crusader Podcast Network, I think you can listen to, like, the latest episode there. You could stream that directly there. But I've kind of been a slacker, and I haven't sent my info to Joe Chetwood. So
there's... Well, I just got onto your rimfirepodcast.com by going through Crusader Weaponry. So, yeah, it works just fine.
Okay, so, awesome.
Yep, yep, very cool. Awesome. Yeah, guys, go check out his shows. They're awesome. They're actually, you know, he's on the same network as we are, the Crusader Podcast Network. So
obviously go check him out. Get some feedback on the new show. See what people think of that, and see what kind of direction people would maybe like to see it go.
Cool. Well, you heard him, listeners. Go check out his new show and send him an email. Tell him what you think. Give him a Canadian perspective on it. For the, you know, 50% who are Canadian listeners, and the rest of you, well, you're awesome too. So, anyway, we're sorry this is another 2-hour episode, but it was 22s. Come on, it was awesome. Yeah, I think we've only got about 3 listeners left. But anyway, right. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So long.
So long, and hug your guns, as Trevor would say. And what else does he say normally?
We're not going to include that this week.
We're not going to do that this week? Oh.
Well, you know.
He's Ron Burgundy? Close enough.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over,
it's time to get a gun. Hello and welcome to Slam Fire Radio. And this is... Yeah.
Yes, Ken, this is how it normally is.
I have to drive when we're done.
I thought you were going to say, and this is Ron Burgundy. I'm like, we're not done yet.
I should have.
That is an outtake right there.